You're tuned to WEHC Emory and WISC FM Wise. I'm Leanne Hunter here with you live in studio. We are broadcasting from the campus of Emory and Henry. It is 1 o'clock on April 17th, and that means it is time for another edition of Farm Talk with Virginia Tech Agricultural Extension Agent Phil Blevins, who is here in studio ready to take your calls and answer your questions about hay. You can give us a call at the radio station at 276-944-6933. And you can always email Phil your questions at pblevins@vt.edu. Now, here's Phil.
Thank you, Leanne. It's certainly a pleasure for me to be here again today. And thanks to all those that are listening. I would encourage you, if you do have questions, feel free to call in and or to send me an email. I think one of the programs we're going to do in the future is I'm going to take some questions that I receive periodically and answer those questions on the show, and if you maybe it'll spur some questions from you. I do want to remind everyone, as I announced last week, that this weekend the Washington County Extension Master Gardeners program in our Extension office will be hosting the Garden Fair at the Higher Education Center on Friday and Saturday. If you have an interest in that, there'll be educational programs as well as a garden show there if you're interested in going to that. So I just wanted to remind everyone of that. We started a discussion last week about producing high-quality hay, and I wanted to continue that because we didn't get as far as I would, and there's some as I thought I would, and so I wanted to continue some discussion of that. We were talking about hay quality last week, we were talking about hay quality and how stage of harvest affects that. And I had a question from someone this week regarding that. And I did some looking at what Wisconsin, the University of Wisconsin has said. And this was in particular associated with rye, with cereal rye that many people use as a cover crop and then harvest it in the spring for a hay crop. And the question that they had was, how does quality decline once rye reaches the boot stage, which is just about the time the head is starting to emerge from the stem. The flag leaf, which is the top leaf, has turned out at that point. And actually, Wisconsin had done some research on that, and they determined that for every day past the boot stage, that rye lost 4 to 5 relative feed value points each day. And so that emphasizes the point that we made last week, that once it gets to that point, it begins to mature, and those digestible parts of the plant begin to decrease, and the indigestible, or the lignin, begins to increase. And so just keep that in mind as we think about it. And so I wanted to go on and talk a little bit more about some of the things relative to fertilization. And obviously, as I've advocated, you need to do a soil test. But one of the things that the soil sample doesn't show you is the nitrogen level or the sulfur level in the soil. And we've determined from research that we've done at the experiment station here at Emory that there is a need for sulfur. One of the reasons for that is if you go back a few years in the eastern part of the United States, we received enough sulfur out of the rainfall to meet the plant nutrition needs. But because coal plants have been cleaned up, scrubbers put on the smokestacks, and some plants have changed to different forms of energy to fire them, we have a sulfur deficiency now. We have very little areas where there would be a sulfur surplus in our soils anymore. So some research that we did at the station showed that we need at least 7 pounds of sulfur per acre when we're fertilizing cool season grasses like fescue and orchard grass. And that needs to be put down in the sulfate form, and that would be in the form of ammonium sulfate would be the most practical way to get it in part of this part of the world. Some people use elemental sulfur, and that's fine. The only problem with that is that's not going to be available very much of it in the year that you put it down, because it has to be converted by the soil microbes into a sulfate form. So it's the ideal thing to do is to put that down in the sulfate form. And if you're thinking about that on an acre basis, since ammonium sulfate's 24% sulfur, you're talking about putting down about 30 pounds of that material per acre to get the 7 pounds of sulfur. As I said, nitrogen is not evaluated in a soil sample because it's transient in the soil. It doesn't stay there. It either volatilizes or it can be leached or it can be denitrified. And so it's impossible to get a good reading on that from a soil sample, particularly one that we only take every 2 to 3 years. And so there'll be a recommendation on your soil sample that will give you, based on what crop you put down, and in this case, grass hay, it's going to give you a recommendation based on that. It's based on research as to what the grass would need. Now, if you have clover in the stand that's greater than 25% clover, then that clover is going to supply the nitrogen that's needed because it is a legume. And as those rhizobia die on the roots, they release that nitrogen that they've captured from the air, and that's made available to the plant. So keep that in mind as well. The other nutrients that we look at, the big ones are phosphorus and potash. And potash is, they're all important, but potash is really important for some things that are extremely important for productivity in hay. And one of those is stand survival. Sometimes we have stands of grass that thin out, and it may be because the potassium levels in the soil are too low to sustain the grass. It's also important for stem strength and for plant health and nitrogen utilization. Those nitrogen applications that we put down should be equal in most cases by the potash amounts that we put down so that the nitrogen is utilized like it should be. And plus, potassium is important for winter survival on stands of grass. Another issue that comes up in our part of the area, and I remember this started back after 1988, those of you that were here then and aware of the drought that we had in 1988, seemed to really thin out some grass stands because it was such a severe drought. And there was a weedy grass that began to show up called sweet vernal grass. And it was not very common for a while, but now it's everywhere. And sweet vernal grass is interesting in a couple of ways. It's really a problem in grass. Number one, it heads out real early. It doesn't have much in terms of leaf. But the other problem that it has is it has coumadin in it, or if you're familiar with dicumarol, which is used in rat poison, it has coumadin in it. And when you mow it, if you've seen it, it's a real short type grass. And when you mow it, it really smells sweet while you're mowing it. It's got a pleasant smell to it, but that's about the only good thing about it I can think of is how it smells, because it doesn't contribute anything as far as hay quality goes. And on rare occasions where there was a high percentage sweet vernal grass in the hay that was being fed to cattle, there could be some deaths in that. That's a very rare thing to happen, but it is possible, and it produces the same problems that dicumarol or coumadin do in rats. It thins the blood, and then if they get bruised, they begin to bleed. Those of you, maybe some of you that are on a blood thinner that has coumadin in them. And so that one's a difficult one to deal with because there's really no product that we can use that will selectively take that out of a grass stand. It seems like, at least from this is my opinion, that from my perspective, the thing that takes it out of the stand is if we reestablish a grass stand, and if we keep our fertility up, then we can have some success in keeping the population of sweet vernal grass down. So I also wanted to talk about some machinery considerations. You know, obviously we have to harvest the hay. It's not of any value if we don't do that. And one of the things that can be a problem is our mowing height. How much stubble do we leave when we harvest a hay crop? I mentioned this when we were talking about lawn care and lawn management a couple of weeks ago, but cutting height is extremely important. And with the invention of disc mowers, people were able to mow grass extremely close in hay fields and almost looked like you were shaving the ground. And that seemed like that really looked neat when we got done with it. But it's detrimental to the productivity of the grass because if we mow closer than 2 to 4 inches, particularly if we can leave it at 4 inches, that's where we need to be. And that may take some machinery adjustment. That may take a different set of shoes for the disc mower to be able to get that done. But some research that was done show in terms of persistence of the stand, There was some research done that looked at persistence over five harvests. And when 4 inches was left at each harvest, almost 100%, in almost every case, 100% of the stand survived. Versus mowing it to 2 inches, less than 60% of the stand survived after five cuttings. And I think that may be the problem. I hear people talk about that it seems like they can't keep a stand of orchard grass, that it just doesn't seem to last like it used to. And I think in some cases that may be the problem, that we're just cutting it too close. And the standard disc mower, when I talk to producers about it, it's very hard to adjust it to leave very much stubble. And so it may take some adaptations to it, like that some shoes to put on it or whatever, to keep that 4 inches there. And our variety test up at the research station, we leave 5 inches of stubble. And we have excellent yields on that grass, and it doesn't seem to affect the yield. And so I know everybody wants to get every bit they can, but sometimes maybe we're a little too greedy, maybe not intentionally, but just maybe by virtue of the design of the machinery that we're using. But we do need to leave that 4 inches of stubble if we can do that. Another and of course, when we harvest, one of the issues in this part of the world, particularly with getting that first cutting of hay in when it should be, is getting it dry or getting it cured so that we can make that crop of hay. And keep in mind that forage generally has to lose about 75% of the moisture that it has. And so what that means is that we're going to lose 2.3 to 3 tons of water per acre to dry to a 60 to 65% range, which would be the right moisture for making haylage, or 5.7 tons of water if we're trying to get it down in the range of making dry hay. So that's a lot of water that we've got to lose out of an acre of grass when we cut it. And how we harvest that and how we manage harvest when we're doing that can have a huge impact on that. And plants, by design, they reach a maximum level of starch in the late afternoon, which is beneficial for quality of hay because that gives us more energy value there for the animal that's eating it. And that's what we're after. But even after we cut it, the plant continues to metabolize those starches and sugars through respiration. The plant continues to respire even after we've cut it. And respiration is highest at cutting and declines as plant moisture declines and stops when the plant moisture is below 40%. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get it below 40% moisture as quick as we possibly can so that we can stop respiration. And I'm going to talk about here in just a minute after we take a break, I'm going to talk about some things we can do as far as harvest management goes to try to expedite that and to help maintain quality.
If you were able to come to the radio donor night or listen in on the radio that night, you would have heard the Emery Boys live. Well, guess what? We're doing another concert, and we're doing it in the style of a tiny dorm concert. This event will be Saturday, April 20th at 7 p.m. in the Emery and Henry Village. The townhouse number we're going to be in is 6C, and if you can't find it yourself, you can always listen for the music or just tune in on the radio. We will be broadcasting live on WEHC. So I hope you get the chance to listen.
This is WEHC Emory, and we are in the middle of Farm Talk with Virginia Tech Agricultural Extension Agent Phil Blevins, who is talking about hay and is here to answer all your questions. So if you'd like to give him a call, the number is 276-944-6933. Now here's Phil.
Okay, we're talking about harvest management before the break and how we can expedite drying the hay down or getting the moisture down to where we can stop respiration in the grass. And so the initial rapid drying to lose the first 20% of the moisture is going to reduce a lot of the loss of the sugars and starches and increase the digestibility of the grass, which, as I said, is what we're looking for. As I said early on last week, the ultimate test of hay quality is how the animals perform on it. And so while starch content may be the highest in the afternoon, the hay needs to be cut early enough in the day for this rapid drying to occur. And if we wait till evening, obviously that's not going to happen. And so why does that make a difference? And we're going to get to that. And so what happens is you have really three phases in curing of hay where we're trying to get that hay down to where it's baleable, to where it doesn't mold. And so you have this initial phase where the moisture that you're losing moves from the stems to the leaves and out through the stomata, or the openings in the leaves that the leaf uses when it's alive to respire, to either retain moisture or to allow moisture in. And so that would be the initial phase. And so these stomates, or stomata, I should say, allow carbon dioxide to take up by the plant. And so they open in the daylight and they close in the darkness. So that's important to think about that. They're open in daylight unless there's some kind of moisture stress, and then they close in the darkness. And so that's where we're losing moisture in the plant. So that's extremely important. And if you can see a microscopic picture of the stomate, or they have guard cells around them that actually regulate this. They kind of look like a mouth in the leaf, if microscopic. And so that's where CO2 or carbon dioxide and moisture are being exchanged or leaving the plant. And so the initial drying takes place through the natural pathways, including the stomata. And leaf tissue is about 85% moisture. And so leaf tissue has a really high surface to volume ratio and numerous stomata in it. So it makes it easier for the leaves to lose that water. And so they lose that relatively quickly after we harvest the hay. The second route that the plant can lose moisture is through the stem. And so stems have a semi-impervious wax layer on them. And that needs to be cracked, or that needs to be scarred some way so that moisture can be lost through the stem. And those of you that are hay producers out there are familiar with what we call conditioning, where you have conditioners either in a hay bind, or when I was a kid, we pulled a conditioner separate from the person mowing the hay. But conditioning enhances that drying because we crack the stem or break the stem, and we open up places for the moisture to leave through the stem. And so over time, what we're trying to do is maximize that moisture loss. One of the neat things about hay binds when they first came out was they made such a nice windrow behind the machine when you were mowing. But it turns out that that narrow windrow where we pile the hay up is really not ideal as far as losing moisture and as far as drying out the hay in a rapid way. Because what happens when we pile that hay up is if we pile it up, part of that hay's in the dark then, because that underneath, that on the bottom, it's not exposed to light. And if you remember a while ago, what causes those stomata to close, and one of those things is darkness. And so the stomata close up on those leaves in the plant, and respiration continues, and sugars continue to be broke down in that grass, and we lose quality as a result of that. So what they found, particularly at the University of Wisconsin, was that making a wide swath or leaving the hay behind the hay bind that was 80% or more of the area we cut had really nice benefits. One of those was faster drying of the crop, and the other was higher forage quality. And some of the advantage to that rapid drying of hay, or if we're making haylage or baleage, is that it shortens the harvest window. The quicker we can get the hay to the point that we're putting it in a package in a bale, or we're chopping it and putting it in a silo, the better our chances are of having quality or of avoiding rain. And then it reduces the chance, in that case, for rain damage. And some research at Tom Kilser had done showed it with dairy cattle that wide swath chopped hay produced, in this case, about 300 pounds more of milk per ton of forage. And with fermented or with baleage, for example, about 200 pounds more. So it's worth doing. All it takes a little bit of adjustment of the hay bime. Now, if we're making haylage or baleage, it's not necessary to use a conditioner if we're using wide swaths, because we can get that hay moisture down relatively quickly with a wide swath, and we're not trying to get it down to where it's, we're making dry hay. And so with haylage or baleage, then it's not always necessary to condition. With the exception to that might be if you were making summer annuals like sorghum sedan or pearl millet, something that has a big stem in it. And so keep that in mind. And so conditioners, as I mentioned, are essential for breaking that stem or actually mashing the stem. And there's a couple of different kinds of conditioners. The roller kind is the one that most people are familiar with. It actually, the hay travels between the rollers. If you've never seen a conditioner, if you're not a hay producer out there, it's somewhat similar to a wringer washing machine. If you remember the old wringer washing machines that we mash the water out of clothes with. That's similar to what a conditioner with rollers in it does. Now, there's another type of conditioner called a flail type that actually has metal fingers in it on a drum that spin. And they essentially scar the stems and hit the stems and break them so that you can have that type of moisture loss. But keep in mind with legumes, if you're making alfalfa hay or haylage, or if you're making clover hay or haylage, they're going to beat a lot of the leaves off of it. And so they're really not recommended for legumes, a flail type. The roller conditioner is recommended for that. And not many people have one of those, but keep that in mind if you're in the market for one. They work well on grass, but if you've got leafy plants, like alfalfa or clover, they're going to be extremely hard on it. Another thing that affects that leaf loss, which we want the leaves. That's the high-quality part of the plant. The stem is the lower-quality part. So we want to maximize the leaves that we're harvesting, is a tedder, something that we would ted hay or turn it over or stir it up. And tedders are a good piece of equipment if we use them right. But that needs to be done before the hay dries too much, particularly with legumes. If you can ted that alfalfa when it has a 50% moisture level in it, you'll lose about 5% of the leaves. But if you're making dry hay and you let it get down to 20% moisture or almost ready to bale and ted it, then you're going to lose about 20% of the leaves. And so that's really impacting quality in a big way. If we think about another one of the things that a piece of machinery used in the hay harvest process is the rake. And the rake is the second largest contributor to leaf loss. And so ideally, when we get ready to bale the hay, we want to rake that hay, if possible, while it still has a little bit of moisture in it, or we would say in case. Those of you that have grown tobacco know what I mean by that, that it has enough moisture where it's just a little bit pliable, and so that we don't knock as many leaves off of it. And with the rake and with the tedder, what we really want to do is we don't want to beat the hay. We want to try to get our ground speed and our power takeoff speed somewhat synchronized so that we're just turning the hay, that we're really not thrashing it or throwing it around while we're doing it. And that takes a little practice or just a little bit of time and a little bit of effort to get that done. Okay, and one of the other things that can cause leaf loss is the baler. And, you know, if we bale, ideally we want to bale in the same direction that we mow and rake, and that reduces leaf loss. But leaf losses during baling can range from 1% to 30%. And conventional square balers, like most people used to use, not so much anymore, we can make those bales at a little higher moisture, maybe 20%, but large round bales, should be made at 18%. And so the reel on that baler that's running in front of the round baler, again, that needs to be, our ground speed needs to be in our our reel speed, our pickup speed, need to be synchronized somewhat so that we're just pulling the hay in rather than beating it as it comes in. And so when we think about all the things that go in to making hay, there's a lot of things that we can do to mess up a good crop of hay when it comes time to harvest it. But there are some things that we can do to improve that quality that we have control of. We can't control the rain. We can't control how much moisture there was before the rain, but we can control the things that we do when we're getting ready to make it. Another thing I wanted to mention before we get to the end of the program today, a couple of things. One is when you're raking hay, you need to adjust that rake where you're really not raking a lot of soil up into the hay. Some of the ground-driven rakes have to run in contact with the ground to some degree, but we need to try to minimize that as much as possible, because if we are raking that soil into the hay, that ends up on a forage analysis showing up as part of the ash content of it, and ash is of no nutritional value or very little to cattle. It may have a little bit of mineral in it, but that's it. And so for every percent of ash that we have in the forage sample, we lose that much in terms of feed quality. Another thing is with those of you that are making round bale silage or balage, that soil can contribute to problems as far as fermentation in that bale goes. And so we can cause spoilage in that if we harvest it too wet or if we bale it too wet, if we have excess soil contamination, or you know, if we kill a rabbit when we're baling or a snake or something and bale it up in the bale, and then we have this high moisture, we run the risk of botulism in that case. And there have been occasions, it's fairly rare, but there have been occasions where producers have lost cattle due to botulism in the hay, either because it had too much soil in it and it was too heavy or too moist when they baled it, or it had some type of dead animal in it. There's a lot more to making hay, but we've run out of time today. And so, as I said, if you do have questions, feel free to contact me. I hope everyone has a good harvest season. We were short on hay this past year. We're looking forward to a good harvest season this year, and I hope you have more than you can feed. So good luck to everyone.
You've been listening to another edition of Farm Talk with Phil Blevins. As always, please feel free to send him an email with your questions, and he will reply either by email or here on WEHC on Farm Talk, which airs each Wednesday at 1 and re-airs on Thursdays at 6:30 and is also available as a podcast. So that email address is pblevins@vt.edu. And those questions can be about any topic, because Phil is just a wealth of information.